Chapter 108. People who chose to skip the church were more successful than those who tried to follow the directions. The people from Bergen County had a basic idea of where it was. Ron's Essex County people were totally lost, except for Harry, who had driven the route yesterday, seen the mistake. He hadn't bothered mentioning it to anyone. When they went inside the club, they saw about 30 people sitting in a cold room, huddled in their coats. They did not smile at the bride and groom. Ron went looking for Mr. Miller and found him in his overcoat. "Mr. Miller, the room is freezing." Roy Miller smiled at the groom who had not hired him to coordinate the reception. "Some people like it warm. Some people likes it cooler." "They're freezing in there. Could you please turn the heat on?"
"Are you sure you wouldn't rather do that yourself?" said Miller. It was then that Ron understood.
"No, I'd prefer that you did it. I'm really supposed to be greeting people and such."
"All right, I'll make it warmer." Miller went to the thermostat and turned it up to 85 degrees. When Ron came back downstairs, he saw Celeste looking troubled and worried.
"What's wrong?"
"Everything," said Celeste.
"What do you mean?"
"Let's see. Everyone is lost, the room is freezing, and the bartender just left."
"What do you mean he left?"
"He got beeped and told Bottles that he was sorry, but that he had to go."
Ron sighed and said, "Okay, what do we do now?"
"Bottles said that he would tend bar."
It wasn't what either of them wanted. Bottles was a good friend to Celeste, and they had wanted him to be there as a guest, not an employee.
"That's really nice of him. There's something else. Roger said that two of the waiters they hired didn't show up, and that they will have to serve buffet style."
"That's not so bad," said Ron.
"Rita said that the kitchen is not what she thought it was going to be, and that it was going to take a lot longer than she thought."
Ron felt the tension starting to build up inside of him.
"Okay, tell Bottles to make the drinks strong. If they can't eat, let's get them warm and drunk."
It was then that Ron saw Marjorie and George come through the door.
Marjorie looked at him like she wanted to spit.
"How could you do this to me?"
"Do what?
It took us an hour and a half to find this place, and it's freezing in here. Look at those people shivering in their coats."
"The heat's on now."
"Well, isn't that nice? Usually you turn the heat on before the people arrive."
"Mom, it's my wedding," said Ron.
"If that's what you want to call it, I call it a disaster."
Ron felt slapped. "I'll do the best that I can."
"Yeah," said Marjorie, with a disgusted grimace.
Ron looked over at the long line at the bar and saw Bottles working feverishly. Part of him wanted to go over and help, but he wouldn't have known what he was doing, and that kind of move might actually drive Marjorie over the edge. The room seemed to be getting warmer, except for the older women, who still sat in their coats and appeared to be shivering. Other people had taken off their coats and were moving around in relative comfort. It was then that Ron saw Anna and Mario come through the door carrying Angel. Anna was moving more quickly than Ron had seen her move before. She marched up to Celeste and gesticulated and said something that made Celeste shrink. Ron watched from a distance. When Anna saw where she was seated, she turned and glared at the bridal table from the other side of the room. Marjorie hadn't made her way to her table yet and didn't realize when Ron had moved the bridal table, he'd neglected to rearrange any of the other tables. As a result, both his family and Celeste's family were seated in the rear of the room, and friends that were supposed to be in the rear were now up front.
It was just then that Pipes waddled out, carrying a milk box that would help him to reach the keys on the piano. When Ron walked over to shake hands with Pipes, he realized that his fingers were webbed. He wanted to ask how he managed to play the piano, but he guessed that he would soon see. Ron and Celeste found themselves explaining to the guests that there was a mistake in the directions for the next hour. Those of them that knew Celeste looked at Ron and said, "You let her do the directions?" Ron felt her blushing next to him and realized that he felt more badly for her than he did for the guests. When he saw Harry, he said, "Do you have any trouble getting here, Dad?" Harry Tuck smiled his impish grin. "Not a bit." Celeste physically relaxed next to him. He could almost feel the tension going out of her body. Harry added, "I made the drive yesterday, figured it out." That was his dad. He was never going to get caught being lost. If he did get lost, it would be on his own time, so that no one would ever know. Marjorie said, "Why are we sitting back here?" "That's my fault," said Ron. Marjorie frowned. "Well, I guess that shows how important I am in your life." "It wasn't like that. Because of the extra guests, they had to remove the dance floor. Originally, the curtains were supposed to be drawn, and we were supposed to be at this end of the room. When I told them to put us on the stage, I didn't tell them to rearrange the tables." "What a mess," said Marjorie, and walked off. At 90 minutes into the reception, no food had yet been served, but the room was now very warm, and people had been drinking. Roger and Rita served the wedding table first, but neither Ron nor Celeste felt much like eating. They had made their way around the room for the first time, and people had begun to give them envelopes of money. Quimpy took Ron off to the side and handed him a bag stuffed with 2 ounces of the finest golden pot he'd ever seen. "Congratulations," he said. Ron stuffed the bag into the inside pocket of his jacket. It bulged too much. He tried his pants pocket. It still stuck out. He walked back into the room where Celeste had hung her white fur coat, found it, that if he wrapped it inside of her coat, that it couldn't really be seen. He just had to remember to tell her it was there. Pipes came over and said, "When do you want me to start playing?" Ron said, "Now would be good." Ron and Celeste began to dance as the dwarf played Imagine. In the background, they could hear the waiter saying, "Table 5, we're ready to have you eat now." Pipes belted out Imagine No Religion, and Ron found himself drawn to look at the priest and minister, who didn't seem to notice. Ron held Celeste close, and they swayed slowly to the song. It was the first time that they had danced together, and she moved so smoothly, while he felt himself to be awkward and tentative. To Ron's surprise, there was applause when the song ended. Maybe everything was going to be okay. Most of the people had food now. The room was warm, maybe too hot. But Ron wasn't going to have another encounter with Mr. Miller, if he could avoid it. Quimpy was now looking around to see if anyone would notice if he slipped away. He had his eye on an antique chair that he saw in the vestibule. Quietly, he dragged the chair closer to the door. He took another surreptitious look around the room, and quickly picked the chair up and was out the door. He loaded it into the back seat of his pink Cadillac and returned to the party. He made sure to lock the door because he didn't really trust the neighborhood. It was about 2.5 hours into the party that the people who ate the undercooked chicken began to get sick. Mostly it was women, and they blamed it on too much alcohol and not enough food at first. Then someone said that her chicken had been bloody inside. Ron closed his eyes and just wanted to disappear with Celeste. He looked over at her with a stupid grin and said, "How long do we have to stay?" Celeste's eyes widened, and she giggled.
They'd kill us if we left.
They're gonna kill us anyway, said Ron.
Warren Lashley made his way over to Ron and Celeste.
Do you mind if I borrow your bride for a moment? He drawled.
Sure, said Ron.
Let's go for a little walk, said Warren.
I'll just get my coat, said Celeste.
When she found the pot tucked inside of it, she called Chris over and said,
Can you hold on to this for me?
Chris grinned. Absolutely, but I don't think we should smoke it here. Celeste smiled and stroked his cheek.
I'm sure that Ron wouldn't mind if you smoked one.
Marjorie might, said Chris.
It was very cold outside when she and Warren got out the door.
You weren't anything like I thought you'd be, said Warren.
What did you think I'd be, said Celeste.
Shorter and cold, said Warren.
But you're warm and friendly.
Celeste felt his arm slip around her waist.
Thank you.
She realized that he was a little drunk.
You know, Ron and I are very close.
I know that he admires you.
We share everything, said Warren.
He drew Celeste to him and kissed her.
When he tried to make the kiss passionate and opened his mouth, Celeste pushed against his chest and said,
I'd better get back inside.
She turned and walked away.
She wasn't sure if she should tell Ron or not.
He was over at the table with Paolo DeFreo and Herman Horvath and Anthony Fiangello.
Ron grimaced when he looked at their plates and saw that Horvath and DeFreo had the chicken that was leaking blood.
He took a deep breath.
I'm really happy that you guys could make it.
I couldn't resist meeting the beautiful woman who tamed your spirit, said DeFreo.
Celeste and Lashley came up next to them.
And here she is, said Fiangelo.
I don't want to tame you, said Celeste.
She just wants them all to herself, said Lashley.
Ron made introductions. Lashley and DeFreo seemed to size each other up from a distance.
Ron had told each about the other, and he somehow thought there would be a mutual interest to create a bond.
It did not.
There was something slightly awkward to their chit-chat, and then Ron took Celeste's elbow and led her off.
Ron whispered in her ear,
That was weird. I thought they'd like each other.
They just don't know each other, said Celeste.
Ron thought about that. In his naivete, he expected them all to hit it off.
He liked them, and somehow he thought that would translate into them liking each other.
It hadn't.
People came up to them with gifts. Envelope after envelope was delivered as they sat at the bridal table in front of the meal that they hadn't touched.
Ron embraced his great aunt, Anita.
Tears were in his eyes
as he could see his Aunt Dottie, his Uncle Mike, his great-grandmother Minna, who taught him how to read and recite from the Bible.
He held Anita's hands.
You gave me a lot by just staying alive to be here.
She looked at him up from her white face and silver hair.
I love you. I've always loved you.
Your Uncle Mike loved you.
I'm sorry that I'm not your Aunt Dottie.
Celeste heard this exchange and wanted to cry for both of them.
It must have been so hard to be the last of your generation and to be forgotten.
Jimmy and Janine came over and slipped Celeste an envelope.
Janine whispered in her ear,
I hope that he's an animal with you.
Celeste felt heat on her cheeks.
Jimmy shook Ron's hand and said,
Good luck, coach.
Ron looked into his eyes. He knew that he had seen more football than Ron ever would.
The game had taken its toll on Jimmy and left him proud, but bitter.
Ron wondered why he wasn't bitter about it.
Was it because it ended so early?
What was the dream like when you almost made it to the highest level?
Was there anything more that you could draw from the game after that?
Ron wanted to know Jimmy better.
Paolo DeFreo was well-manicured, formal, and warm.
He grasped Celeste's hands and said, "Thank you for inviting me. I think he will be a good man for you." In ways that he could not possibly imagine yet.
Herman Horvath was more cautious with Ron's women after Robin had bitten him. He was polite, but did not touch her and hid his hands.
Herman smiled at Ron.
"Where to now?"
"Jamaica," said Ron. Herman was teaching as well. He'd stopped writing. He did translations only now. Ron looked over at Angel and felt the need to hold her. She meant so much and had only had a small part in the day. She was in pajamas now. Ron walked to the stage and gathered her up into his arms. He whispered, "Are you sleepy?" Angel wrapped her arms around his neck and said, "No, I'm lonely. You know that your mom and I are going away for a few days. They told me. I'll miss you. Why can't I come? We'll be back soon." Angel didn't respond. She just held him. And that instant, Ron wanted all of this to be over and them to be back in the basement and for her to be fresh from her bath. He gave her back to the teacher who they'd hired to be her companion for the day. Celeste felt herself beginning to breathe again. It was almost over. As the reception drew to a close, Ron and Celeste thanked everyone for coming. They tried to do it individually, but some people left before they could get to them. Mr. Ray Miller approached them as they were about to leave. "I wish you many happy years." Celeste said, "Thank you." Mr. Miller said, "There's just one thing. It seems that something is missing." Ron looked confused and said, "What?" "A chair that one of your guests was observed loading into the back of his pink Cadillac." Ron and Celeste felt a simultaneous wave of embarrassment. "I'll make sure that it's returned, and I'm sorry."
"We should have hired you. We made a mistake."
"People need to learn from their mistakes," said Mr. Miller.